From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on Tuesday at Nazareth College when 550 high school students, 67 teachers from 21 local schools came together for a global citizenship conference, an annual event sponsored by the Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies and Dialogue. And it is timely, you might say. Look around the world, or just look around the presidential debates. You will find conversations about religion, religious differences, how we handle our differences, and more. So what did the students talk about on Tuesday? What did they learn? What were the subjects they covered? And what will they do going forward? Our guests for this hour are going to tell us about not only this event, but I think we're going to talk about religious differences, interfaith dialogue, and more. And let me welcome our guests for the hour. Reverend Gordon Webster is here, a board member of the Hickey Center and a co-chair for the GCC. And Reverend, nice to have you back. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thank you.
Nora Bradbury-Hale is here. She's a co-chair for the GCC as well, among many other hats you wear in our community. Nora, it's great to see you.
Good to see you again.
Also here is Jake Evans, a Victor High School student who was there on Tuesday. And what year are you, Jake?
I am a sophomore.
A sophomore. Welcome. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Awal Du is here. And Awal is a junior at Bishop Kearney. And Awal, great to have you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Reverend, what's the goal here? This event's been happening for, I hear, 5 or 6 years now?
This was our sixth annual Global Citizenship Conference. And before I say anything else about it, thank you for being the keynote.
Oh, well, I was there in the morning just for about, you know, I was in and out.
It was great.
Give me any credit.
It was great. And more high school students were here than we've ever had. We're basically twofold concern. One is to introduce or deepen our students' knowledge of world religions, and we have probably 15 to 20 different world religions that are represented by 80 religious leaders that have come. So they do this free because they care, and we are really grateful for this interfaith community we have in Rochester. And so that's one. And the other is that we really wanted the kids to address questions of understanding, tolerance, but more than tolerance, being able to celebrate the differences and learn from the differences, etiquette in the corridors of the high school. Some of the high schools are developing interfaith clubs because of this. And in fact, we were started by a Muslim student at Brighton and a Jewish student at Brighton who became friends and created an interfaith club at the Brighton High School. And their principal, Nancy Hackett, was very much behind this understanding and this learning how to engage with one another in positive and mutually affirming ways.
I could go down, Nora, I could just go down the list of the subjects that were addressed and covered on Tuesday, and it is a long list. Islamophobia, myth-busting about Abrahamic faith, myth-busting about Indian beliefs, Hindu, Sikh, Buddhist, emotional intelligence, sexual identity and religion, spiritualities, Native American and African American, the piece of the puzzle, P-E-A-C-E, Unitarian and the Society of Friends, non-theistic traditions, non-violence, a closer look at Gandhi, think globally, act locally, religion and media and pop culture. I mean, I could probably spend half an hour just reading the list here. There was a lot going on. And so when we talk about what was the goal, there's not a singular goal. There are so many different themes there. But what do you see coming out of a day like that?
One of the things that I mean, I've spent my career working with young people, and one of the reasons I love that work so much is because there's so much hope there. And this conference is a way to connect the energy of young people and the difference that they want to make in the world with some real skills and knowledge about how to do that. So, you know, I was telling a friend about the conference and just how energizing it is to be there that day. And you know, the young people come, they're you know, some of them on a college campus for the first time, not sure what to expect, and a little bit reticent at the beginning, you know, hopeful, but not too sure what's going to happen. And by the end of the day, they're like ready to go. They're ready to make a change. And so many of them are seeing and hearing the rhetoric in the news right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And are just fed up and just like, this is not the world that we want to live in. And this is a day that helps them know how they can move that needle, how they can make a difference. And so, you know, to just put the tools in the hands of young people who are ready to use them is a real thrill.
I mean, just go down the list. LGBTQ in religion, interfaith success stories, the golden rule across the globe, religious tolerance in American politics. We'll get to that and more. A wall to, for you. What was the most meaningful part of Tuesday for you?
The most meaningful part for me on Tuesday was the Islamophobia. A bunch of my friends don't usually know anything about Muslims or their religion or their culture, and all they hear is what's on the news and what other people have told them. And for them to go there and learn all about, like, the culture and, like, the religion, and a lot of them, their mind changed, and it was kind of like, why did I accept the fact that this person said this? Why did I accept the fact that the news said this? Why was I thinking that way first? And it's just kind of heartwarming to think that programs like this do change the minds of young people. And
you saw it in one day.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool stuff. Jake, what was the most meaningful part for you?
Well, I did a workshop on gender inequality, and my friends and I, we talked about gender stereotypes and how you can shoot down those stereotypes. And it's important to me because I see people getting affected by their gender and how that impacts them. And I think it's important for people to understand that just because you are feminine or just because you're masculine doesn't really define who you are as a person. And I think that was really important.
Okay. Well, you know, as Awal just mentioned, when you hear in the news, when you see on TV certain comments, certain debates, it's easy, I guess, no matter our age, if that's all we're kind of taking in and we get it in little dribs and drabs as opposed to really having conversations with people either from a particular faith or a different part of the world, whatever it is, that maybe our views on certain things are colored in certain ways. So let's listen to something that happened 16 hours ago. And this was in the Republican presidential debate last night. I want to listen to this back and forth between two of the candidates, Donald Trump and Marco Rubio, about Donald Trump's comments about Islam.
Last night you told CNN, quote, "Islam hates us." Did you mean all 1.6 billion Muslims?
I mean a lot of them. I mean a lot of them.
Do you want to clarify the comment at all?
Well, you know, I've been watching the debate today, and they're talking about radical Islamic terrorism or radical Islam. But I will tell you, there's something going on that maybe you don't know about and maybe a lot of other people don't know about. But there's tremendous hatred, and I will stick with exactly what I said to Anderson Cooper.
I know that a lot of people find appeal in the things Donald says because he says what people wish they could say. The problem is presidents can't just say anything they want. It has consequences here and around the world. 2 days ago, I met this extraordinary couple who are on furlough because they're missionaries in Bangladesh. It's a very tough place to be a missionary. It's Muslim. And their safety and security very much relies upon friendly Muslims that live alongside them that may not convert but protect them and certainly look out for them. And their mission field really are Muslims that are looking to convert to Christianity as well. And they tell me that today they have a very hostile environment in which to operate in because the news is coming out that in America, leading political figures are saying that America doesn't like Muslims. So this has a real impact. There is no doubt that radical Islam is a danger in the world. Anyone out there that has the uniform of the United States on and is willing to die for this country is someone that loves America, no matter what their religious background may be.
You can say what you want and you can be politically correct if you want. I don't want to be so politically correct. I like to solve problems. We have a serious, serious problem of hate.
I'm not interested in being politically correct. I'm not interested in being politically correct. I'm interested in being correct.
There's an example. Kind of what you're talking about, Awal?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think when you hear that?
It's a shame to think that America, which is people look at us at America as America the Great. People want to come here for freedom, religion, and stuff like that. And to hear a person running to be a president talk about a religion like that is very sad. And as humans, it's like we still go through this and this still exists. It's just like a shame, and you can't really change much, but taking one step at a time and kind of like letting the young people know what's going on and like informing them and telling them the truth can change a lot of things over time, and that maybe one day we'll get out of all of this.
Mm-hmm. What did you think, Jake, when you heard that?
It was kind of difficult to listen to. I don't think it sets a good example for especially people that are younger to watch the news and then see him saying this, because I don't think he really understands the religion, and that's what we try to fix, is if you have a better knowledge of it, then hopefully it will try to decrease the amount of intolerance towards the one religion.
Reverend, thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that our students have really picked up what we are trying to do with this Global Citizenship Conference year by year. Humanize the reality of different participants in religion. It's one thing to talk about Islam, but Islam doesn't hate. Islam means submission to the will of God. But Muslims are adherents, and Muslims are human beings. And precisely what Awal said, we need to understand each other's humanity, even though it might be in a context of different set of teachings in Islam than it is in Christianity or Judaism or some of the others. But there are also some similarities in the teachings. So the education we need to have about these religions is one part of it, but just knowing human beings. And we're very fortunate in Rochester to have the Islamic Center of Rochester, where many, many of us in the interfaith community and in the Christian community have very good friends who are there, one of whom is Dr. Imam Mohammed Shafiq, who is the director of the Brian and Jean Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies and Dialogue at Nazareth College. God bless Nazareth College. They are very, very supportive. The administrative folk, Don Braveman was there on the stage with you, Evan. And they're proud of this outreach across all of the religious traditions, that we can be human beings with one another and learn from each other, rather than by innuendo saying there's something evil because we don't know what it is, but until we find out, we're going to be very, very violent or very hateful. That makes life very, very difficult to have a candidate say such a thing.
Yeah, and, you know, I know some listeners who are probably prone to hear some of the discussion here and think, well, that we're being soft on extremism. It's not the goal at all. But, Nora, what bothered me, I'm not afraid to say what bothered me, maybe most in that whole exchange, was that when Mr. Trump responded, when Jake Tapper asked him, do you mean all 1.6 billion Muslims hate America? And his response was, I'm saying a lot of them. And the audience largely laughed. Yeah. There was laughter, as if that's as if it's either funny or good for him for telling it like it is. Ha ha. It was a very awkward moment to me, and awkward being a euphemism. What did you make of that?
Well, what it made me think of was these beautiful young women that, along with Awal, put on that workshop. One of them had come to our summer program. We run a week-long sort of partner program out of the Hickey Center for young people in high school. And one of those Muslim girls had participated in that week-long program. And she came back to help with the GCC conference. And she said to me with tears in her eyes, she said, that was the best week of my life. And to be in a community of people who are working together to build understanding, to build tolerance, was just really inspiring and life-changing for her. And I just wish, I don't think that Donald Trump is a person who's really capable of taking in new information or learning new things. But I think that a lot of people, even people who find the way that he speaks exciting, I think a lot of those people are people who can hear the message that these young Muslims are saying, those extremists are not a part of us. They are something different from us. And I wish that those folks could hear these young Muslims talking about how they perceive those extremists as this has nothing to do with what we believe. It has nothing to do with what we are. And we stand with mm-hmm. you against terrorism. And the other thing that I think is really important to remember is we're talking about real people and their real lives. You know, one of the girls wears hijab. She wears a headscarf. And she has to, you know, walk through our streets and on our sidewalks and in her school hallway. And when someone's fostering that kind of hate, there are consequences for these young people in their real lives. They experience violence. They experience hate. It's so frustrating to me as somebody who advocates for young people and is trying to build a more tolerant world that there are people out there just sort of willy-nilly spewing that kind of hate because it'll make them more popular.
Well, what can you tell me a little bit more about what happened on Tuesday in terms of creating these kind of workshops, talking to students about religious differences, Islamophobia? Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Well, we began our workshop by having everyone play a game, and we asked them questions, a bunch of questions about like different religions and whatnot. And at the end of the thing, we showed them a video of a lady in the airport who was harassed because she was a Muslim and she was going to London, and they asked her questions as like, why are you here? Who did you come with? Who do you live with? Who told you can go there? And it was just, to see it broke me down. Like, it's really sad to see that there are students that go through that just because they're what religion they are. And, like, a lot of the kids in the class were, like, they felt as if, like, that was not right. And to see that happen to, like, people in the world is just, like, it's just so stressful, and it makes us think, like, what's this world going to end up as? And to have GCC, it's kind of like, it's like a thing that we can just look forward to, and it renews, like, everything else that we see in the world, and it just gives us courage to be better people.
Yeah, it sounds like it, Reverend. It sounds like, you know, we are sometimes in danger of succumbing to some cynicism. I always say I try not to let cynicism dominate. And sometimes it's difficult, but cynicism is a negative force. Realism, I think, is okay. And sometimes realism is tough. But this is the kind of thing that seems to counter, I think, some cynicism.
It actually does. And it does on a very realistic basis. We're actually face-to-face with each other as American Christians and African Muslims or Arab Muslims or Indonesian Muslims or Turkish Muslims, and they come from many, many, many different countries and cultures, and it's a world religion as Christianity is, as Judaism is. And one of the ways I think that we can, in this community, have the kind of experience that the kids did at the GCC is to listen to the extraordinary teachers within the Muslim community that we have. I went to a conversation at the Interfaith Alliance of Rochester, and the speaker was the former imam at the University of Rochester, Dr. Rashid Muhammad. And he said, people come up to me knowing that I'm Muslim, and they say, explain what ISIS is doing there in Syria and cutting off people's heads. Explain that. And he said, I would like to hear a good explanation for that myself. I think it's not good. There is no good explanation for that. This is terrorism, this is barbarism, this is criminality, and it is not the Islam that I practice and I know. This is not Islam. The Nazareth College had a gathering and talking about ISIS theology and the difference between that and traditional Muslim practice of Islam. And you know, it's like a Muslim coming up to a Christian in America and saying, explain the terrorism of the Ku Klux Klan. And the Christian would say, I don't believe in that. That's not Christianity. I mean, they may claim that they're Christians, but they're not Christians. That's barbarism. That is crime against other human beings. So we really do have to understand each other's humanity. And when I feel cynical, you know, I go and work with Nora in getting the next GCC up and running so we do this again next year.
Sure. Or if I feel cynical, some people like Sarir Fazali and Dr. Shafiq, I owe you coffee, or I'm late. I'm overdue. And those are the kind of things that, as we talked about in my brief stop over there on Tuesday morning, these are the events that remind us all, break away from whatever like communities we are, because we have this tendency as human beings to sort of cloister in these like communities if we're not careful. A couple of quick listener comments, and I know the phone is ringing as well. Jake writes to us, different Jake, not the Jake who's in studio. Listener named Jake says, how do groups and events like this get heard? I certainly don't hear them on Fox News or CNN where they need to be. So we're trying, Jake. This is just one example here, but it's a fair question. But here's a different viewpoint. Tim writes to us and says, I have to ask, why are we allowing religious meetings in public schools? It happened in Nazareth, but Nora?
That's a great question. I was just reading an article this very morning, and I wish I could remember who the outlet was that had published it. But it was talking about how many colleges are beginning to phase out the religious studies program right at that point that we need them the most. It's not about proselytization. It is about learning to live in a pluralistic world. And, I mean, these are skills that we need to have. This is knowledge that we need to have as global citizens. That's why we name the conference that. The kids are there with their social studies departments. You know, the social studies teachers understand that this is a skill. And as, you know, as more and more we are an integrated world, as Americans are traveling all over the world for business, we can't be idiots about religion. And unfortunately, right now, we kind of are. It's something that we really need to work on. And so I would say to that, it's not about learning to practice a religion.
Or proselytize.
It's about learning, you know, where the similarities are, where the differences are, how to interact in a world where people have different beliefs in a respectful way.
550 students. Reverend Nora, how big can this thing get? You know, because years ago, I mean, it was not 550 students.
You know, we were wondering whether we could increase the size of that gymnasium so that we could have 700.
I don't know what the fire marshal has said.
Fire marshal has got to weigh in there. There are certain realities. But I'm very glad that the public schools throughout Rochester understand the value of religion alongside of culture, alongside of political movements, shaping the way human communities exist. And when we can live in a pluralistic society with respect, that's what the Hickey Center itself was created to help us do in all of our professions. And Laura's right. In business, people lose contracts because they don't show respect for the Hindu businessman that is across the table from them. They just don't understand how you would behave with respect in India in front of a good Hindu. The same is true with Buddhists. The same is true with Muslims and Jews and Christians from business people coming here from Asia, and more are. We need to understand what makes us the human beings that we are.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the event that happened on Tuesday at Nazareth College, sponsored by the Hickey Center for Interfaith Studies and Dialogue, the annual Global Citizenship Conference. 550 high school students, 67 teachers from 21 schools, most of them from right here in our area. And we're talking to some of the organizers, Reverend Gordon Webster, Nora Bradbury Hale, and Jake Evans is a Victor High School student. Awal Du is a Bishop Kearney student. And they participated and helped lead some of those workshops as well. Let me start taking some of your phone calls because I know the phone's been ringing. If you want to weigh in, you can do that for the rest of the hour. We start with John and Webster. Go ahead, John.
Hi, Evan. Good topic.
Thanks.
As a philosopher, religious tolerance is one of the central planks of the modern democratic states. And it was John Locke, in his Letter of Toleration in the 17th century, who kind of made the main claim. But that we should be tolerant of religions, all religions, except Catholicism. He had his own bigotry against Catholicism because he thought that...
You're talking about Locke?
Yes, John Locke.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he felt that Catholics could not be loyal to a government, but they would only be loyal to the papacy. Tolerations had an awful lot of problems with it. The central philosophical problem for me is understanding how a principle of toleration can coincide with genuine moral and religious convictions. And this is apparently what the young people have been talking about. I think it's fine to say that there's humanity in everyone, but I don't know how you can tolerate someone whose views are so radically different. We've talked about terrorism. I just can't imagine being with a group of terrorists who chop heads off and trying to claim there's humanity there. It just astounds me. And as far as religion, I think that organized religion, any organized religion, is a problem, a serious problem.
Okay, well, hold on, John. Stay there, because I it's an interesting point of view to have. I'll start with Nora. What would you say to John with the premise saying organized religion can be a problem? How would you want to have a dialogue with John?
Can I back up to something he
sure,
said
absolutely.
About toleration? So,
yeah, yeah.
So when we're talking about tolerance, I will confess where my intolerance lies. My intolerance lies with violence, particularly with violence in the name of religion. So that's where I draw my line. And while I could maybe see the humanity in those folks who do violence and understand possibly how they got to that point, I'm going to say I'm not tolerating that behavior and I'm not tolerating those beliefs, because we can't live together with folks like that. They need to be stopped. People at a higher pay grade can decide how that should happen. But what I'm advocating when I'm talking about tolerance is, you know, yes, religion can be blamed for a lot of violence. I also think that people who want to be violent put on the cloak of religion very frequently because it's quite convenient and it's a very good disguise for people who want to be violent. And I have grown up as a religious person. I remain a religious person, but I'm engaged with all these different religious people who are just some really fantastic people. And, you know, honestly, most people for most of the history of the world have been religious people. And so we're going to have to figure out how to live together.
I agree with Nora. My line is exactly in that place. And probably one of the most powerful books that it has been written recently, as of last year, that I've read on this is Not in God's Name, Confronting Religious Violence, written by the former chief rabbi, Lord Jonathan Sacks, of the British Commonwealth, where he was in charge of all of the Hebrew congregations in the British Commonwealth. And he basically argues that the problem is not going to be another person's religion in the 21st century, which is a very different century than the one that John Locke lived in. The problem is going to be sibling rivalry and sibling violence against siblings in every different religion. And so you'll have Protestants fighting each other, and I'm, you know, a Protestant Christian, and I'm married to a Catholic Christian, and you have Catholic Christians fighting each other, and Muslims are fighting each other. More Muslims have died from ISIS terrorism than any other religious tradition in the world. And this is the kind of thing that we have to think more deeply about. And Rabbi Sacks gives us a good way to do this in his book, Not in God's Name.
John and Webster, want to follow up? Go ahead.
Sure. I thought, I don't know the lady's name, but I thought her comments were pertinent. I really don't think the gentleman who just talked his comments do anything for me. But what I mean by religion is a problem is I think it... In my way of thinking, it clouds the thinking of people. It doesn't allow them the free range of thought that has to come in order to have clear thinking and to think on problems that need philosophical answers. I don't see any answers in religion. I agree with the new atheists, Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and Christopher Hitchens. If I'd still been teaching, I'd have been teaching those books in a survey of philosophical problems in religion. I just think organized religion is a great problem in the world. To have religion for oneself is something entirely different. But organized religion, whether Catholicism or Protestantism, and I might comment that I was raised in England, and I was a Protestant in a small coastal town, and we walked on the left side of the street as Protestants. But when my father, on his deathbed, decided to go back to Catholicism, we were changed almost overnight. I was 11 years old to become a Catholic. And we had to switch walking on the streets because of where we lived and the fighting that went on between Catholics and Protestants. In the 60s, I saw it in Northern Ireland of what was going on. And I've seen it in the Western states between Christians fighting, and especially in politics when religion gets into it. I just think organized religion is the greatest hazard to the human mind.
Well, John, first of all, I appreciate the phone call, and let me say that I think a lot of what I saw on Tuesday in my brief visit there was an effort to curb exactly that sentiment that says no matter where you are in the world, if you're one religion, you need to be on one side of the street, and if you're another, you need to be on another, and never the two shall meet. I mean, it's exactly the opposite of that. I think part of John's premise is we're never going to get there, that we're always going to have divisions and splits if religion persists, sometimes to the point of violence. And I understand that concern, but I know that the people involved with the GCC on Tuesday have a higher-minded goal. I want to take a short break, and John mentioned Sam Harris as one of the new atheists. Sam Harris has said, and John probably agree, that religious moderation is a hazard because it is sort of it prevents us from being able to criticize or to even talk about religion at all, and it's kind of covers up for extremists. Well, I want to kind of continue the thread there. When we come back after this short break, we'll take more of your phone calls as well and talk to our guests here, Reverend Gordon Webster, Nora Bradbury Hale, Jake Evans from Victor High School, Awal Du from Bishop Kearney, and you next on Connections. And coming up on Monday on Connections, Dr. Michael Greger is the author of How Not to Die, a book examining the top causes of death in this country and how nutrition and lifestyle choices can lead to healthier lives. He's coming to Rochester for a lecture at the Rochester Academy of Medicine. But first, the author of How Not to Die joins us on Connections.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
Tuesday's GOP primary in Florida is a must-win for home state Senator Marco Rubio. Donald Trump's campaign is also organizing volunteers on the ground.
Usually we do a contest for, you know, whoever the person in each county that does the most calls, then they get a meeting with Donald Trump.
More on the complicated ground game in Florida later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on your NPR News station.
All right, welcome back to Connections. Nora Bradbury Hale, who is the co-chair of the Global Citizenship Conference that happened on Tuesday at Nazareth College. You wanted to kind of pick up a little bit more on what you heard from John. Go ahead, Nora.
Yeah, I think John's criticism of religion, you know, there is... I resonate with a lot of what he has to say, and when you look at the religious conflict around the world, it's hard to not see some of those problems. What I did want to just kind of offer the hand of friendship to him on was that part of this conference. One of the workshops is on atheism and agnosticism and secular humanism. And we are inviting those folks that share our values from all different religious traditions and also folks with no religion to be a part of this conversation. And I think, you know, the important part of that is, you know, as, and I think I said this earlier, as much as there are folks that wish there were no religion, first of all, I think it's naive to believe that would end human conflict. But as if we could do that, you know, and I just think that in that sense, that, you know, we may one day experience a humanity that doesn't have religious belief, but in the history of humanity, that hasn't happened yet. And so in the meantime, I think we need to learn to live together. And atheists, agnostics, and secular humanists are part of this conversation of shared values around human dignity and social justice.
Well, when it comes to criticism and when it comes to conversation about religion, some of what people like Sam Harris have written are that we have to at least be able to agree that if I criticize a religious idea, I can disrespect an idea without disrespecting a person. In other words, I can respect you as a person, but I don't have to always respect your ideas. And this past fall, there were a number of comments that came up. Actually, a number of listeners wrote to me saying, you've got to talk about what Ben Carson is saying. And I said, what am I missing? What's Ben Carson saying? Well, he said a number of things that were sort of, I would say, interesting from a religious perspective. And actually, John, these are a couple of cuts we have from the last hour, if you could. I don't know if you've got them ready here. But this is just an example of how we sort of talk about religion. And what Ben Carson had said was about evolution. And, you know, of course, Dr. Carson was running for president. You're going to hear some of the comments he makes on why he doesn't believe in evolution. And you'll hear him use the term the adversary, which is a term for the devil or Satan. First of all, let's listen to what Dr. Ben Carson said about evolution.
I personally believe that this theory that Darwin came up with was something that was encouraged by the adversary. And it has become what is scientifically, politically correct. Amazingly, there are a significant number of scientists who do not believe it, but they're afraid to say anything.
I don't know how he would know that to be the case unless he's talked to a lot of scientists, and that's possible that there are some. There are very few scientists I've ever met who disavow evolution. But this is an example. I had listeners write to me saying, listen, if we say you can't criticize someone's beliefs, then we can't talk about what Dr. Carson just said. And this man could be president, and all of a sudden, if he is, what's going to be taught in schools? And listeners were saying, listen, I don't respect that, and I don't have to respect that. And so, Nora, do we have to respect that? I mean, when we say respect someone and their beliefs and respect human beings, can we respect and love people but still be tough on some of the details? Can we debate stuff like this?
I think we can, and you know, and we have to, and you know, and part of why we do the work that we do is so that we've got the relationships so that we can have those conversations. If we're not in conversation with each other,
that's a great point. That's a great point.
You know, so we can let's talk about the easy things first. Let's talk about the things we agree on, so that when we get to the hard stuff, we have a relationship to have those conversations in the context of, and we can trust each other enough to be people of integrity.
In other words, if we're never talking except for when we want to come and I'm going to either make fun of what you believe or I'm going to dispute it and, you know, we're going to throw a few bombs and then walk away, good luck on ever finding common ground. But if we are regularly talking and we have a relationship, and then we say, but listen, I want to know why you believe this. I want to talk about this. And then I want to buy you a beer and I want to talk, you know, a little bit more. That's different, right? That's a very interesting way of framing it. And Reverend, you want to jump in as well?
And that is precisely the premise upon which we have interfaith dialogue here in the greater Rochester area. The one dimension of John's sharing with us, having been a philosophy major myself, a lot of what he said, going back to John Locke, is obviously well-informed, and I really appreciate that. But I was moved by his talking about his childhood experience, where as a Protestant he had to walk on one side of the street, and when his father made them become Roman Catholic, he had to walk on the other side. Now, that entered into, I am sure, that which creates our sense of identity and probably was confusing for him, certainly at an emotional level. And I really felt for him at that point. How did he come to deal with that emotional trauma of being one and then being the opposite, as if somehow that could happen, and yet it did in his family. So I just, there's more conversation there to be had, mm-hmm. rather than to say, you know, I'm going to disagree with your ideas, and I don't know what his ideas are yet and where they're rooted. So it would take a relationship, and I think Nora's exactly on point to what we're really trying to do.
I think that's one of the, that's just such a well-made point, Nora. I mean, when those emails came in about Dr. Carson, at the time he was leading the polls, the presidential polls, in the fall. And so, of course, I kind of dig into what he said, and then I jumped online, and I did see people making fun of it. There were people lampooning that comment. It was around the time that he also said something about the pyramids. He said he thought his view was that Joseph from the Bible built the pyramids for grain storage, and then he disagreed with archaeologists and scientists that they were Pharaoh's tombs. Now, historically, we know that that's wrong, but he was lampooned and made fun of, and my guess is you're not going to have a good dialogue. And then, of course, some of his defenders said, well, there we go, religious bigotry. And my reaction was, well, that's not religious bigotry to debate the merits of what he said, but I now understand much better that's just not a very constructive way to make a point. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to change any minds
right.
if we're making fun of, no matter, you got to kind of pull it back and be willing to have a more productive conversation.
And I think, you know, I'd love to get back to the young people yep. on this, because, you know, so much of our work involves developing friendships. And both Awal and Jake have been a part of that summer program where they go through the week with kids from different faith traditions. So there's this formal program where we're having speakers from different religions and we're visiting different religious worship sites. And so we're learning about the stuff of religion, but we're also learning each other. We're also making friends so that when a question comes up or when somebody says, Muslims believe this,
right.
they can say, well, you know what? I was with some Muslims this summer, and they weren't like that at all. Let me call and ask them, you know, what they think about this.
Sure.
Let me go online and see, you know, what my friends say about this, because I have friends of different religions that I can talk to now.
Jake, have you felt like since, for example, since Tuesday, but really, historically, I mean, this conference now is 6 years old. I know I've talked to some of the organizers. You're someone they hold in high regard. Are you feeling like you can walk out on Tuesday and take it out of, as Nora says, from the workshops into everyday life, that you're going to have conversations with your friends, you're feeling a little more at ease with having conversations with people from different faith groups?
Oh, for sure. Especially in school, there's like multiple comments, there's ignorant people, and I do stick up for them, and for if they're making fun of people or a faith or whatever someone believes in, their culture, I have a greater knowledge of it than some people in my school, and I am definitely comfortable with just, I'm not being mean to them, I'm just informing them that maybe they should do some more research before they talk.
Okay, well, and how do you feel? Same kind of question. You walk out Tuesday, but are you applying these things day to day, week to week, with your friends in school and in your life?
Yeah, definitely. So, all of my friends that went there on Tuesday, we were at softball practice, and one of our teammates said something, and we all were just like, no, that's not how it goes. This is not how it goes. You're wrong. And then we all kind of gave them, like, facts that we learned, and it was just like, they kind of just stood there and was like, oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that. And then it's kind of like mind-blowing to just see that the facts that my friends just learned that day, that they can just take it out to the world and make the world a better place. And it was just like, it was really good to see.
It sounds like it's being put into action. Let me grab another phone call. Wilma in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Wilma.
Hi. I wanted to respond. First of all, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to respond to John from, I think it was Webster,
mm-hmm.
Some of the comments that he made. And I know that a lot of people seem to want to brand Islam with being a horrendous and vicious religion. But some of us in the U.S., as Christians, are blind to our own U.S. history, and we border on the hypocritical when we vilify Muslims for terror, because the film Shadows of the Lynching Tree and the book Cross and the Lynching Tree by James Cone really bring out the point that the lynching and the treatment of blacks and Native Americans and Mexicans in the U.S. is just filled with Christian symbolism, and yet at the same time, that is the cross, and at the same time, they were not behaving as Christians. So I just want to point out that there is a lot of truth in what Jonathan Webster mm-hmm. said about organized religion and it being, and also what the woman from the Hickey Center said about organized religion being a badge or cloak for bad behavior. But at the same time, we as Americans have to recognize that we have built our church also on terror.
Thanks for the phone call, Wilma. Reverend, what do you think?
I think Wilma is exactly correct. Just to make it clear, this is Wilma Campbell, and she is a partner in this work that we're doing to expose what happened at the time that lynching was taking place by using the theologian James Cone's book, The Cross and the Lynching Tree. Her work is extremely important, and several of us are supporting it.
Thanks for the phone call, Wilma. Bill in Brighton has been waiting. Go ahead, Bill.
Very quickly, Reverend Webster and I share our common alma mater, and one of its mottos I remember of 50 years ago was by Socrates, who said, "An unexamined life is not worth living." What Donald Trump has done for I think the better and not the worse of him, is force the examination we're having today by virtue of this show. And I would also point out that Gordon Webster has pointed out that the commonality that we should search for starts with Abraham and the journey of three faiths, all of Judaism, Christianity, Muslimism, all start from Abraham. And there's a settlement, Gordon Webster said, in Israel today, where Jewish and Arab teachers are teaching children who are learning Yiddish and Arabic Hebrew in this spirit of common search and cause. I want to just end by saying that the preparation, research, and thoughtfulness of you and your colleagues in planning this talk show is second to none in the community. Thank you so much.
Bill, thank you so much for the phone call. I appreciate that. I've read and heard a little bit about the stories of parts of the world where, you know, religious communities, children kind of growing up together, studying together. It's certainly a hopeful thing. Do you want to say hello to Bill way in there, Nora? Reverend, go ahead.
Thank you, Bill. It's great to hear your voice. The village that he's referring to is in Israel, mm-hmm. and it's called Neve Shalom, Wahad Al Salam, the Oasis of Peace. And since the 70s, the children who are Christian and Muslim and Jewish and secular primarily, but there are some religious families there, are learning each other's language, learning each other's histories, and will argue vociferously. But they will then go and plan dinner together. Then they will go and take care of each other's children and educate each other's children. And they have been together now for 40, going on 50 years. And it gives me a great deal of hope. And I'm personally involved in supporting that village.
Let me see here. We'll try to grab one more quick phone call because time's running short. We've got about 30 seconds. Go ahead, Herman in Brighton.
Hi, I would like to take issue with the gentleman who blamed just about all the ills of humanity on organized religion. He is guilty of some of the same things that Islamophobes and anti-Semites and other people with prejudices are guilty of. He's using generalizations and uninformed, you know, uninformed prejudice. The religions have often been, and anybody can point to instances of where horrible things were done in the name of religion. But if you look at the religions more closely, you see that in many ways they were a civilizing influence and an antidote to the tendency of humans to act selfishly. And as for answers, if you study the religious traditions, you see that they're all about grappling with difficult questions, sometimes finding answers, and sometimes answers can't be found, but at least they grapple with the questions. So I think he's totally off base and needs to do a little more studying before he forms opinions.
All right, Herman, thanks very much. And Matt Lewis, in his book, Too Dumb to Fail, he's a conservative writer, he made the same point. He said that a lot of scholarly tradition comes from a religious background throughout time, and that he wants to see the conservative movement get back to that, get back to embracing intellectualism. But I let me just defend John a little bit and just say I think he means very, very well. And I think the concern is, especially among some skeptics or atheists, is that they think there's something limiting about believing without evidence, what that does to someone's worldview. But I think John means well. And Herman, I know you do, too. I appreciate the phone call. So look what happened here. The hour just melted and it's gone. And I wish we had another, but I want to thank all the listeners who were able to call and communicate by Twitter and email and all the different places that you do that with Connections. We always appreciate that. Awal and Jake, I know you're just two examples of 550 students at the high school level, many more who've already gone on to Nazareth at Hickey, studying the interfaith studies there. So I know it's a great tradition they're building. Awal, it's been great talking to you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And sorry to take you out of Bishop Kearney today. I don't know if we did, but thanks for doing that. Jake, I'm so sorry if it's a school day to take you out of Victor High School today.
It's okay.
It's all right with you?
Yeah, it's all good.
Thanks for being here. Reverend Webster, great talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Evan.
And Nora Bradbury Hale, great talking to you as well. Thank you.
So good to be here. Thanks, Evan.
John Andrus is our engineer. Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a lovely weekend, everyone. Talk to you Monday.